Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. And in this special hour-long broadcast, we're going to focus on the new political reality here in Massachusetts. Earlier today, after one of the closest gubernatorial races in recent state history, Democrat Martha Coakley officially conceded. Republican Charlie Baker will be the next governor.
The suspense lasted into the wee hours of this morning, and when it was over, Baker had beaten Coakley by less than 2%, or about 40,000 votes. Here's Martha Coakley addressing her supporters this morning.
I would not change a single thing. I was so honored to do this race. I've learned so much. I learned a lot about myself and about Massachusetts. I think we did everything we could have done. We left nothing on the table. And look, there's only one winner.
And an hour later, that winner, Baker, addressed his supporters. He said watching the results come in late last night was like a roller coaster ride.
But I think in the end, the voters responded to our message about focusing on the economy and focusing on educational excellence and focusing on sort of that bipartisanship and balance on Beacon Hill.
Baker said his first order of business is to assemble the team to serve in his administration. And this afternoon, he met with Governor Patrick to begin planning a transition in January.
So we're going to spend some time now looking at the governor's race and other key elections in New England. And to help us do that, we're joined by Democratic consultant Susan Tracy, a regular here on Radio Boston. Hi, Susan. Good to have you.
Hey, Anthony.
Also, Republican consultant Rob Gray, who we're also happy to welcome back. Good to see you, Rob.
You too.
And Susan and Rob, would you first start by telling us whether this was the result you expected, including how close it was, as we said, less than 2%. Susan?
I did. I think the polls, for the most part, other than the, you know, outlier Globe poll, I think for the most part, we found that every poll really since September had this race at 4 or 5 points, 3 points, all within the margin of error. So not surprising that we're coming down to a race that's a little over a point between the two.
And the Globe poll you referenced said nine.
Nine,
which Martha Coakley's
right.
campaign called an anomaly.
Yeah.
Rob Gray?
I think that's right. I thought it was close all along, and I wasn't a believer in the Globe polls, and I think a lot of Charlie Baker supporters, although they welcomed the polls, they feared that it would take away the urgency of people getting out to vote for him. So
they think it's a foregone conclusion and don't bother.
That's right. But at the same time, I think those polls helped him in terms of people believing that a Republican could win. It probably helped with some newspaper endorsements. And people do want to get on board with a winner. But I always thought that it would get, very, very close at the end. I wasn't sure that Martha Coakley's field operation was enthusiastic enough to pull out the Democratic vote, as has been the tradition in the past. But it looked like she did pretty well with those operations on Election Day.
Susan Tracy, do you think the fact that it was so close affects or will affect the way Charlie Baker governs? Does he have to keep in mind the fact that almost half the people voted for the other person?
Absolutely. I think it's going to affect him. He didn't break 50 on it. And I'll tell you where I think we should all keep an eye. If I was Charlie Baker, especially in Massachusetts, the first thing I'd want to do is bring Democrats on board to my transition team and into my administration. So I'd keep an eye for that. I wouldn't be surprised if he brought a prominent Democrat to maybe co-chair his transition committee. But I think you're going to see him emphasizing bringing Democrats into his race, into his campaign.
You know, I wanted to ask you about this idea. And we have a great election map on WBUR.org. Listeners can actually go there and look at it. And Susan and Rob, it just reminds me, we always talk about deep blue Massachusetts. But if you look at this map and the communities that went for Baker, they're in red. The communities that went for Martha Coakley are in blue. And with the exception of the cities and western Massachusetts, this state looks very red. Now, of course, the reds are really purple, and the blues are really purple. But it's just a reminder that this, and Rob Gray, I'll sort of put this question to you. Do we need to be reminded that this isn't a deep blue state? It's a purple state.
Well, and a majority of voters are unenrolled,
yeah.
Which, you know, tells you exactly that and why the map looks the way it does. I was struck by this map in that it was very similar to the 2010 map and the maps in recent competitive U.S. Senate races. But the margins were different. The red-blue towns were essentially the same. But Martha Coakley didn't get the margins in some of these communities that she should. I think in particular where she was hurt were these sort of lean liberal Range Rover postgraduate degree communities like Wellesley, Wayland, Needham, Milton. Baker won those for the last 10 or 12 years. Going back to Mitt Romney beating Shannon O'Brien, Democrats have always won those. And then in town she won. Some more towns, Sharon, Newton, Natick, Concord, Lexington. She won, but not by enough, by a few points when she should have been winning by 10 to 20 points.
Hmm. It's margin and it's also volume. You know, in the presidential years, you get such a large volume of voters. So I think, you know, those tend to be bluer. I mean, that's the whole game plan of a ground campaign, right? Is get as many votes out as possible because they do tend to be more Democratic. And the other thing, I think, to your point, Anthony, about the state being purple, what strikes me is that in the last 24 years, two-thirds of those years, the state has had a Republican governor.
Yeah, it's a good thing to remember. Well, speaking of Republican governors and the next Republican governor, I'd love to ask you both about what was the biggest factor in Baker's win. What did he do so right? I mean, we talked a lot about on this show, you know, Baker 2.0. He was softer. He was gentler. He wasn't as angry as he was 4 years back. But Rob Gray, what went so right for him?
Well, I think he did run exactly the campaign that he needed to run. It was moderate, positive, mostly non-controversial. And I think that's because he wasn't running against an incumbent. And if we look back now at when Republican governors have won, you know, they tend to be open seats, excepting Paul Cellucci essentially winning re-election after Bill Weld resigned and he was acting governor. So I think Charlie Baker didn't have Deval Patrick to have to tear down this time around running for re-election. And it allowed him to run a more moderate, positive campaign, and that's what people were looking for, bipartisanship.
Rob, you call it non-controversial. Of course, there was a sort of light L-I-T-E controversy at the end, although many people believe that the timing of it was to his benefit. I mean, he was being hounded about that fisherman story, but then when Menino died, much of the weekend when he might have been further hounded, there was sort of a period of public mourning in which the campaigns went quiet for a bit.
And we've seen backlashes and steep closes at the end in Republican campaigns. When I was managing Paul Cellucci's campaign in 1998, there was a national backlash over Republicans wanting to impeach Clinton over Monica Lewinsky. Mm-hmm. And we saw our numbers go from 10 points up to, within the margin of error over a 5-day period. Charlie Baker was spared that. I don't know if that issue would have caught on, but it certainly would have been in the news had political reporters and others not been diverted to cover news of Mayor Menino's death.
I want to talk a little bit about Martha Coakley, and we were all watching this afternoon her press conference when she conceded to Charlie Baker. It was a very human Martha Coakley, even a much more sort of human, softer, vulnerable Martha Coakley than I think we saw in the campaign trail. Here she is becoming at one point quite emotional, talking about the opportunities she had in her life. Let's listen.
You know, my mom didn't get have a chance to go to college. All right, so this is where I might need my Kleenex. Really. I want to say this to all the young women who have worked on this campaign, who have thought about running for office, who have tried and maybe not won. It's important that you do it.
That's right.
It's important that you lean in.
Important that you lean in. Susan, you know, Martha Coakley faced some criticism that she was a little too stiff, a little too controlled. I'm just wondering if I was struck by what I saw this afternoon. Is that a side of Martha Coakley that maybe she should have been willing to exhibit a little more
and if I
during
could just,
the campaign?
I want to jump in, Anthony, and add one thing to that, which is, as you know, we had her on the show last week.
That's right. And
she was sort of safe in her answers, bordering on impersonal. And the Martha Coakley we saw today after she lost was a different woman. And I think both of us, Anthony and I, were talking about why
Absolutely.
Didn't we see that woman during the race and why did it take a loss to bring that out?
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. One, I can't tell you how many times I've watched a losing candidate speak and have the people in the room say, where was that candidate during the race?
Yeah.
I do think there is something liberating when there are finally no stakes involved and you don't feel like you're under the same microscope. And I do think it allows you to let your guard down, and I think you saw that. Yeah. And I do think that Martha Coakley does sometimes run with the guard up, and whether that is a function of her past experiences as being a district attorney or being a lawyer, or maybe it's as a woman candidate, you're always a little bit afraid to be emotional because you know, you never know how that's going to be perceived or how the public is going to react to that. So I think there is a little bit of a double standard on that stuff that makes it a little, makes you reserved.
And that issue came out, of course, when Charlie Baker cried over the fisherman. And many people said, imagine if Martha Coakley had shed those tears. Would that have immediately start the article saying, way too sensitive to be in a leadership position like running the state of Massachusetts?
It is. It just puts you a little on guard, I think.
You know, I agree with Susan that she should have done that sooner. And It brings to mind a different mistake that I think the Coakley campaign made, which is here you have somebody running to be potentially the first elected female governor of Massachusetts. It's really a strong way to close the race. I don't think she did it. Had she said this 4 or 5 days before, I think it really would have helped her. She didn't have a strong closing message. I don't think she played to her strengths in that regard. And, you know, we saw that Baker got the margin down in terms of the gender gap with female voters. So I think it was a missed opportunity for Martha Coakley.
What did you think about, we heard that clip earlier on, and I'll ask you both, Rob and Susan, I'll start with you, Susan, this idea that she said, I would not have changed a single thing. Now, clearly, it's probably unfair to, you know, to expect, minutes after she conceded defeat, and she said, and let me explain exactly what I did wrong. But respond to that idea, that I would not have changed
a single
thing.
Well, I think there's one thing we haven't talked about at all, and that is the money differential in this race. It was tremendous.
Yep.
I believe it was like $12 million that the RGA spent in negative either ads or door knockers.
The RGA is the Republican Governors Association, right. $12.5 million.
As of Monday morning, $12.5
million. Correct. 80% of those were negative ads. So, you know, this notion of woulda, shoulda, coulda, why didn't they do this ad or that ad? When you have that kind of an assault coming at you, I am stunned that this race was always able to stay within a couple of points. $12 million in negative attacks would be hard for any of us to overcome.
And for comparison's sake, that's a ratio of nearly 9-1 more than what the Democratic Governors Association spent. So for relative numbers there.
Although if you look at the Martha Coakley super PACs, they put in about $6 million for her. So it's significant, $6 million difference, 2-1 spending advantage. Charlie Baker also had an advantage in terms of the campaign candidate and party spending as well of about 2-1. She was probably outspent by in the range of $8 million. We don't have the final figures yet, but that is a big, massive disadvantage.
And in fact, she talked about that today. Let's listen to what she said. Here's Martha Coakley.
There's no mystery to the fact that we were outspent 10-1 in negative advertising by the Republican Governors Association. I don't think that is a good trend for Massachusetts or for the country.
And here's Charlie Baker addressing the question about what role outside spending played in this race.
I certainly think there are things we can do to limit the role and the influence of outside spending, and that's a great example of something I'd like to work with the legislature on a bipartisan basis to pursue.
So that question raises a couple of things. First, specifically, do you think that's realistic, Rob Gray? Is that something that Charlie Baker and the legislature might take on?
It could happen, certainly. I think Charlie's being very straightforward in being open to that. I mean, there have certainly been other races where Democratic-aligned super PACs have really hurt Republican candidates. And it's hard when you're running as a candidate and you can't control your own message. If we look at the tail of the tape after this race, 60% of the spending in the governor's race will have been done by independent expenditure committees. So when you lose control over 60% of your message, and arguably the most important part of your message, the television advertising, first and foremost, that's hard. You can't always portray yourself the way you want to portray yourself.
And what was interesting is if you looked at what they as individuals raised, what the Coakley campaign raised and what the Baker campaign raised, there wasn't that much of a differential. I mean, Baker raised maybe you know, a million or so, maybe a little less more than she, but they were pretty competitive if you were just on that level. But once the outside money came in, it was just lopsided.
But I think your job as a candidate is not just to be a good candidate, to be on message, to do well in the debates, to have the best campaign staff. Your job is to raise the money. And Martha Coakley and her campaign operation and the Democratic Party writ large, and there are a lot of rich Democratic fundraisers and money people that come out of Massachusetts, they blew it. They blew it. I mean, she did not have the gas in the tank she needed to compete with Charlie Baker. And when you only lose by 40,000 votes, that's tough to take.
Hmm. Rob, I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago. It was your great line about the sort of the W towns that voted for Baker, the, what did you put in the Range Rover post-grad degree, Wayland Wellesley. Ultimately, what do you think when the voters in those two communities looked at these two candidates, what did they see in Charlie Baker and not see in Martha Coakley that made us decide we're going for him, not her?
I think what they saw, I mean, if I look at the Charlie Baker coalition overall, I think it was a slightly diluted version of the Romney 02 coalition with a little bit of the Paul Cellucci urban conservative Democratic coalition mixed in, i.e. Baker won the city of Quincy, okay, which Romney essentially tied in. Mitt Romney, you know, finance professional, Harvard University, you know, strong manager, comes out of business. I think that has a lot of appeal in those communities. And once the filter of because there tend to be a lot of professionals, people in finance who commute into the city who live there, and higher income folks, MBA folks, post grad folks. Once you remove the filter of Deval Patrick, who was an incredibly strong candidate and governor who really appealed to people in terms of hope and inspiration. Once you got rid of that, they kind of looked at a government bureaucrat in Martha Coakley versus a business guy who can manage the state. And I want the state managed.
Susan, Tracy, do you have any different perspective on that?
Well, I also think there's one other piece we haven't talked about, too, which is the timing is not good. Was not good for Democrats this year, one. And it was not good for people who are perceived as being in government. And I think Martha is seen as more of an insider, which is kind of ironic because as someone who's of government, she's not an insider in terms of, you know, the people who are involved in politics and party stuff. But I think from the outside, she probably seems like she's in because she's in office. So I think the timing was tough for her as well. And I also think, Charlie on social issues is, you know, very liberal on social issues. And that's what a lot of people look for in this state. They like that weld, you know, fiscal conservative, social liberal / moderate. And I think that works for those purple places we talked about in the state.
And for various reasons that we've also talked about on this show, it's never been easy in this state, or often not easy, to run for governor as attorney general. I mean, the last attorney general to run for governor and win was Paul Dever in 1948.
It's before our time.
Before our time. The last six Massachusetts attorneys general to run for governor, including Thomas Riley and Scott Harshbarger, they all lost. But here's a really basic question. So Martha Coakley was asked today, what are you going to do next? And she, without missing a beat, said, I'm going to have lunch with my husband. I sort of like that.
And then walk the dogs, right?
And then walk the dogs.
So it wasn't Disney World.
So it wasn't Disney World. One could understand why she might want to make time to have lunch with her husband. But Susan Tracy, what does Martha Coakley do next?
You know, I have no idea what Martha Coakley does next after lunch and walking the dogs. I don't know. She's certainly, you know, really talented. What I found interesting about her is if you look at her career, you know, going back to when she ran for state rep against Marty Walsh in 1994, and then as a DA, and then as obviously the Middlesex DA and AG, her whole life has been in the public sector. I often thought, you know, the story that kind of everybody, I think, doesn't understand is Martha Coakley is a very working class person. She's married to a retired cop and she lives in Medford.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She is the most down to earth of candidates and she is very regular and her whole life is in public service. So I would imagine that she will find some way to stay in that realm. She clearly loves it.
And Susan, you said something quite interesting to us before we went on the air, which is that having done the job she's done and having worked in, for example, sex abuse units, having seen what she has seen in that job, perhaps it gives her a perspective that might help her sort of absorb a defeat, maybe better than the rest of us.
Yeah, I think you'd have to be a pretty strong person to run the sexual abuse unit in the Middlesex DA's office and see what you see there. And I do think sort of some of that steeliness that one sees in her is probably what she's learned to do in her work, and she probably needs that to get through what she's been through.
All right. Well, we're spending this hour talking about one of the closest gubernatorial elections in state history. Charlie Baker will be the next governor. We were talking about Martha Coakley, her concession speech, with Susan Tracy, Democratic consultant, and Rob Gray, Republican consultant. They'll be back in a moment. Stick with us.
That's right. They'll be back. And later also, we'll be talking about the results of the New Hampshire U.S. Senate race. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is a special edition of Radio Boston.